Neat or on the rocks? It's the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Michael LaFlorio talking fantasy football at NFL Network, joining us in the Sports Bar. Let's start with the breaking news of the day, Mike. Tua goes on IR. Not a surprise. And we've had some time here since Thursday, really, to kind of try to decide what this means for the weapons that a lot of us invested a high price in while we were drafting in fantasy football. What does this mean for Tyreek Hill? What does it mean for Jalen Waddle, Devin Achane, and Raheem Mostert if he ever gets back on the field? How are you today, bud?
I'm doing well. Coming off of a big Bills win against this Dolphins team. Look, Tua being out is good for the Bills because the Dolphins are their biggest threat, I would say, in the division. At least now they were, but it's not great with Skylar Thompson. We have seen him start 3 games in his career, one of which was a playoff game against the Bills. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle have both been active in all 3 games. Tyreek Hill has topped 50 yards in one of those. Jalen Waddle has never. So Tyreek Hill, you still have to start even without the play of Tua there. His upside is too high. We know that he could get behind a defense and score a touchdown at any point. Jalen Waddle, I have him on only one team. I'm pretty happy it's not more. I still think you have to start him. You just have to understand that both the floor and ceiling are lower. Given all the injuries around the league, I highly doubt you have another option you could plug in front of him. But if you do, hey, take it. As for the running backs, Devon Achane looks like he's a potential league winner in the making. He got even more volume last week with Tua being down, and even in it being a blowout late in the game, they continue to feed him the ball. So I would expect even more running if Raheem Mostert is healthy this week and getting the two of them going. I think you can continue to ride out with the backs, and Achane is a must start. The receivers, Tyreek Hill still a start, but must start, but it's a little bit more volatile now.
Mike, I love talking to you on a Tuesday because tonight we're all going to, you know, get in front of our laptop and look at the waiver wire and how could we improve the back end of a roster. Maybe you have injuries here. First stop here on the tour being Kansas City. And Isaiah Pacheco, he's going to be out for quite some time, which means, all right, are we putting any stock to what's behind him? What are your thoughts on Carson Steele? Is it going to be him? Is it going to be the other guy, P-Ryan, they picked up from the Broncos? How would you assess the running back situation in Kansas City?
Yeah, first, as the Isaiah Pacheco guy this season, this is awful. But I think you want to go after both of the backs. Samaje P-Ryan is the one that I have a slight lean on because I think he is going to see all of the passing down duty there. And, like, Isaiah Pacheco had 5 targets last week. And I know people are like, well, Steele had more work than Pacheco. Okay, Pacheco signed days before their game one in week one. And then last week he had a 2 weeks to get acclimated. Now that Pacheco is out, I think Andy Reid will build a game plan better to suit the strengths of the running backs he has now. And that will mean a lot of P-Ryan in obvious passing down situations, 2-minute drills, etc. But Carson Steele is bigger. He has juice on the ground. So I think he could be their goal line back. None is going to give you what Pacheco gave you, but I have been putting in bids on both of them. If you're in a fab league, it all depends on your situation. If you're really desperate for a running back, some of my bids are around 20%, but in leagues where I'm comfortable with my running back, some of my bids are below 10%. So to me, it's very much a whatever your situation calls for right now. My only piece of advice is let someone else do the Kareem Hunt thing. They just signed him to the practice squad. Mm-hmm. He had no juice last year, no explosiveness. He looked done. I think he is more a name and a body to have here just in case one of their other backs gets hurt or something like that. But P. Ryan is my preferred guy, but Carson Steele is also worth picking up.
Now, last week when we talked to you, Mike, we were talking about replacements for Puka Nacua. Uh-oh, now you've got Cooper Kupp also down for the Rams and their thin receiving core now. Are you moving forward with confidence with DeMarcus Robinson and company, or are you devaluing these guys now? They're going to get fed. They're going to get more opportunity, but what kind of opportunity will they get here moving forward knowing that Kupp and Nacua are both out?
Yeah, last week I was talking up Tyler Johnson, but now with Cooper Kupp out, DeMarcus Robinson is the top option just because everyone now needs to step up, so he'll get more volume there. Tyler Johnson was the wide receiver two last week, but we saw Jordan Winnington mixed in. We saw Tutu Atwell mixed in. And worst of all, Matthew Stafford was taking a lot of pressure. He was getting sacked often. He didn't really have time to let things break down. And he was spreading the ball out. None of their receivers had five targets. They all had four or less. So to me, it is not a situation I'm breaking the bank for. I rank them Demarcus Robinson, then Tyler Johnson, Winnington, Tutu Atwell, but it all depends on your league size and your situation, but none of them are someone that I'm like heavily using my fab or my top waiver wire claim on. They're typically more backup ads for me.
Michael Florio, Michael F. Florio, NFL Network, our guest here in the sports bar talking some fantasy. Michael, I never thought I would be citing the Hall of Fame game when you know, bringing up an example of one of these players I'm going to ask you about, because you never see anybody that you would not want on your fantasy team for the fifth preseason game. But there were the Texans out there, and there was Cam Akers. I'm like, huh, wow, he actually looks pretty good. All right, well, maybe you stash him. Houston getting Minnesota this week. I mean, there's storylines here. Diggs going back to Minnesota, certainly, see if they feed him the ball. But we don't know about the status of Joe Mixon. So what is behind Joe Mixon? And as we're monitoring the injury reports and the practice sessions this week, what's your advice on Cam Akers, or is there somebody else in that Houston backfield?
No, Cam Akers looks to be the guy right now. Not only is Joe Mixon banged up, Damian Pierce missed week two due to a hamstring injury. And Akers, like you said, since the Hall of Fame game, has looked good. And we've seen J.K. Dobbins play well. The reason I bring him up is because basically their injury histories are very, very similar. ACL and Achilles each in both of their past. I'm not, again, breaking the bank for Cam Akers, but if I'm in need of a running back, I am putting in a couple of bids on him, because just in case Joe Mixon is out, I know they are saying it's not serious and everything. We have heard this before. We heard it with CMC. We've heard it with a lot of other players. And then we heard it with Ken Walker. And then when that player is out the next week, the backup is going off. So, again, not someone I'm breaking the bank for, not someone I'm expecting to be my long-term answer. But if I need a plug-in play option in week three, and a lot of my teams do with all of these injuries, you could do a lot worse than Cam Akers if Joe Mixon.
Now, we saw a little bit of a breakout performance in week two from a product of Wisconsin. We're talking about the rookie, Braylon Allen. Is he the clear handcuff to Breece Hall, and somebody that if you own Hall, or somebody that if you want just maybe for the upside, you want to add this week on the waiver wire, chances are he's available on your roster, or on your waiver wire?
Yeah, he is someone that I'm interested in adding, not just because of what he did. He had half as many carries as Breece Hall and as many targets, which is important because we thought that Breece Hall would get all of that volume. But it is possible that Braylon Allen, especially on a Jets team that is very weak at wide receiver after Garrett Wilson, he could be a larger part of this offense than we realize. But the whole thing is what you said, the backup, the handcuff. He is an injury away from being a top 20 running back with more upside. So he was someone I liked during the draft process, kind of hated where he went because he's going to be buried behind Breece Hall for the foreseeable future. But, hey, he might carve out his own role here, and he is definitely one of the top handcuffs. And with all of these injuries going on right now, you see the importance of, one, having your own handcuff, but if nothing else, having someone else's handcuff, because if that guy goes down, then all of a sudden – now you have a starting caliber running back on your team.
Yeah, I would imagine that somebody paid draft capital for Justin Jefferson, as they should, and hopefully he's going to be okay, but he wasn't able to finish out, and you have Jordan Addison also dinged up there. What do we know about Jalen Naylor? Is this somebody worth considering? Back to this, again, Minnesota-Houston matchup on Sunday.
Yeah, I think so, as long as it depends on the health of the other guys. Like, if Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison play this week, then that's one that you end up throwing back to the waiver wire and you have no need for. But if those guys are out this week, all of a sudden Naylor, who is stretching the field and scoring touchdowns for them, and Sam Darnold has looked great through 2 weeks, now all of a sudden we're talking about him being the top target on the Minnesota Vikings. So another one of those ads, similar to Cam Akers, like, you're not adding him and breaking the bank for him and expecting him to be your guy for the rest of the season. But a lot of people are in desperate situations come week three. I have a team where my entire bench is hurt players. So I need to plug in options, and Cam Akers, Naylor, these are the kind of guys that help you stay afloat and survive, and that's what I keep telling people right now. I had a lot of fun this weekend joking, like, let's restart the season, like, why do we play fantasy, stuff like that, but the truth of the matter is, if you could stay around 500, you will be in the hunt come the end of the year, and if you can stay afloat and then your team gets healthy at the end of the year, you can go on a run and still win the whole thing. So it might be painful right now, but moves like this, like Akers, Naylor, just to give you a guy that you could plug in and get a, if they're the starters, get a safe 10 points for or something like that, could be huge if that helps you get a win down the stretch later in the year. Now all of a sudden you're still contending, your team's healthy, stuff like that.
Michael, are you buying into what we're seeing out of the New Orleans offense? Because I think a lot of people look at Derek Carr and think, he hasn't really even been tested so far this year. He hasn't really thrown the ball a ton downfield. He's been extremely, extremely efficient. And especially if you're in a super flex league, is Carr somebody that has to be picked up, has to be rostered? How are you evaluating him for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I do. And Superflex, he 1,000% needs to be rostered. But I have a one quarterback league where my two quarterbacks were Tua and Caleb Williams going into the year, and neither one has worked out. I can't start either of them in week three. So Derek Carr was my backup. I picked him up after Tua got hurt on Thursday last week, and I'm comfortable starting him. There's two reasons why I believe in Derek Carr. One, Clint Kubiak has brought two things to this offense. They're using motion at, they went from the second lowest rate of motion, now they're in the top 10, and they went from the lowest rate of play action passes to the highest rate through 2 weeks. So those are two things, motion and play action, that make passing easier. It helps modernize their offense. And the crazy part is, we haven't really had a big game out of Chris Olave yet. I'm not saying Derek Carr is going to be the QB1 and the Saints are going to lead the league in points, but I think right now he could be a reliable QB1 for you, especially if you lost someone like Tua and your young guys aren't working out like the position
I'm in. Yeah, I'm looking at some of these matchups here coming up, and I guess it's a lesson that, hey, you can wait on a defense because you always could stream. I see a couple streaming options. Just want to see what you think would be the best play here, whether it's anybody against Carolina. And I would think that in a lot of leagues, the Raiders might still be available there. Maybe not. Certainly their defense is very sound. But I didn't think Tampa Bay was going to do what they did up in Detroit last week, being down all those players in the secondary. And here the Buccaneers are back home against a Denver offense that's, they've looked just as bad as Carolina. What would be your advice when it comes to screaming defenses this week, Michael?
You mentioned two great ones. I love the Raiders against the Panthers, even with it being Andy Dalton. Until we see a reason not to stream against the Panthers, I'm going to do so. The Bucs against the Broncos are a great one because Bo Nix is having turnover issues to start the year. He's taking some sacks. And if you miss out on those guys, the Chiefs, they might not be available, but I like them against the Falcons, the Titans against the Packers, because it's still likely going to be Malik Willis. If it's Jordan Love, I take that one back. And then the Colts, I know they swung and missed last week, but right now the Bears' O-line is awful. They've allowed the most unblocked QB pressures and unblocked sacks this year, so I take a shot on them against the Bears. And if all else fails, Packers against the Titans, because Will Levis is good for like two complete head-scratching moments. He reminds me a lot of a less talented 2018 Josh Allen, where he would like do some crazy things and you'd be like, what is he thinking? Will Levis does that, but even more extremely.
Michael, if you're somebody who invested heavily during draft season in the tight end position and you took Laporta, if you took a Kelsey, are you having that buyer's remorse now? Are you staying the course? What is your advice to somebody who may be invested in one of these guys who just hasn't shown up through 2 weeks?
Well, one, I would have told you should have listened to me and not drafted those guys and instead took Trey McBride, who I had as a tight end one, and you could get two rounds later. But it's too late to go back now. So if you have a Laporta, a Kelsey, a Mark Andrews, I think you have to just continue rolling with them. What is your better option? Like, with Jake Ferguson, Evan Ingram, David Njoku being hurt right now, the tight end position is thinner than ever. So unless you picked up or drafted Brock Bowers as your tight end too, there's no way I could tell you to sit Kelsey or LaPorta or something like that for Mike Gesicki or Jonnu Smith or Colby Parkinson. So you're kind of handcuffed to your tight end one right now. Tight end has quickly become a wasteland once again, but the waiver wire is extremely thin, and there is no one on the waiver wire that brings anywhere close to the upside that those other guys have. So, yeah, I know it's been a disappointing 2 weeks. I'm most worried about Sam LaPorta because Jameson Williams is real and is a huge target threat there, but you still have to ride with him because there's no one else on the waiver wire that could give you anywhere close to the upside that those tight ends give you.
What about Dalton Kincaid? I know you're paying close attention.
Yeah, I'm fine with Dalton Kincaid. Look, week one didn't go his way. I said week two would be better for him. And if you watch the game, and I know everyone listening did, there was a concentrated effort by the Bills to get Dalton Kincaid the ball early in that game. I think him and Shakir and Keon Coleman are the clear-cut top three targets for Josh Allen. It was just a game where James Cook ran all over the Dolphins. They had the pick six. It was a short field on numerous occasions. Josh Allen threw 19 times for 139 yards. I don't got to tell Bills fans there's going to be many games where he throws a lot more than that, especially look at who they have in the upcoming weeks after Jacksonville. They get the Ravens, the Jets. I know later in the year there's the Niners and the Lions. And, like, these are going to be high-scoring games where they have to throw the ball, and Dalton Kincaid will shine. I think week one was just the Cardinals, I mean, did everything they could to kind of take him out of the game. And week two was just a game where they didn't need to throw the ball much. So I think we've seen the floor for Dalton Kincaid. We have yet to see the ceiling, and I still believe that better days are coming. And in all the leagues that I have him in, which is more than a couple, I'm starting him and not even thinking twice about it because, again, am I going to drop him or pick up Mike Gesicki and play him over him? No, I'd much rather the upside shot with what could be the number one target for Josh Allen. So I'm continuing to ride with Dalton Kincaid.
Michael, last one from me, because maybe you don't get what you're hoping for tonight when you find out, when you open up your phone. That's so exciting, right? On a Wednesday morning. Did I get him? Oh, I didn't get him. There's always the trade route. And again, we're only into week three. But is there a veteran right now, whatever position that may be, that is underperforming that maybe might be a reserve on somebody's bench that you could go target? I'll just give you the quick example. I got this dumb trade offer in one of my leagues because I have Jordan Love and I have to kind of sit with him. Hey, you need a quarterback this week. How about Justin Fields? I was like, that was a quick rejection there, but I could see what that other owner was doing there. Like, hey, maybe I can get Jordan Love there on the cheap. Do you have any advice on the trade market right now here as we're entering week three?
Yeah, there's four wide receivers that I would actively be going after. Now, some of them are too big names to be on the bench, but a couple of them might be. The high-end guys are Ja'Marr Chase and Brandon Ayuk. They're off to slow starts. They had to hold out all summer long. They also both get fantastic matchups in week three. I love Trey White. Shout out to Trey White. Trey White has been getting cooked by speed out wide on a daily basis this year. That is Brandon Ayuk. Ja'Marr Chase gets the Commanders, which is the absolute best matchup a wide receiver could have. And then George Pickens, I know last week looked disappointing for George Pickens, but he had a 51-yard catch called back, which was phenomenal play all around by Justin Fields and Pickens. He had a 6-yard touchdown called back, and then he drew another long pass interference play on Patrick Surtain. I think better results are coming for George Pickens. I believe in his talent, the way they are using him, all of that. And then the last one is Deontay Johnson, who is probably on a lot of people's benches right now. I loved Deontay coming into the year because I believe in his talent, his ability to get open, all of that. It's just quarterback play has held him back in Pittsburgh, and then quarterback play has held him back the first 2 weeks. I don't think Andy Dalton is great or anything what he used to be, but he had one start last year where he came in and all he did was force feed the ball to his veteran wide receivers. We've already heard Dave Canales talk up Deontay and that the passing game revolves around him. It's not his fault that Bryce Young was aborting on clean pockets and just chucking the ball immediately. I think Andy Dalton will get the best out of Deontay Johnson, and I'm willing. His value is lower than ever right now, so I'm willing to roll a dice there on him.
Michael, 0-2 isn't the you're not on life support if you're starting a season 0-2. Let's face it, the season's a little bit longer. You might not be feeling great, but you're not dead. What do you say to the fantasy manager here that's facing an 0-3 start if they don't get the W this weekend?
Yeah, 0-2 is not the end. Neither is 0-3, but you really want to get a win. Like, if you lost two games in the middle of the season, you wouldn't be like, my season's ending. It hurts when it happens this early. But you might have excuses. Like, you probably have players that have gotten hurt or something like that. My advice is what I was saying earlier. Like, it's a long season, and it's 14 weeks. All you got to do to be in the hunt come the end of the year is be 500. I play in a lot of leagues every year. Around 500 is in the hunt for the final playoff spot. So take it week by week. And what I keep telling people is, if you're dealing with a lot of injuries, your fab is more important to you now than it is at the end of the year, because you could save it for the end of the year, but who cares if you're four games under 500 or something like that. So if you can use your fab now, for a lot of these players we spoke about, Quentin Johnston is another one that I like a lot that we didn't really talk about. But if you can get these players, and I'm setting my waivers based on my situations. I have some leagues where I'm spending three times the amount of bids on a player than I am in other leagues because I need them way more. I have some leagues where I can't set a lineup right now because of all the injuries I'm dealing with. So your situation should dictate how aggressive you are with your fab spending and your waiver bidding tonight. But it is not over. It is only 2 weeks. Everyone is going to deal with injuries if you got bit with it early. It's almost a blessing because, if your team can get healthy and you could sneak in the playoffs, you can win it all. I've seen it happen many a time. So we are far from over. We are just getting started. But you are in a position now where if you're dealing with a lot of injuries, you're 0-2, something like that, you need to be thinking about how can I get a win now and survive these next couple of weeks.
Michael F. Florio, fantasy expert and Bills fan. Tell everybody how they can get more of your content this week as we're looking to set our lineups.
Yeah, NFL Fantasy Live on the NFL Network, Insiders, NFL.com, Rotoballer.com, all the places you can find my work. And just all in one, just follow me on Twitter at Michael F. Florio. That is, you see everything there.
Michael, great having you on with us. Really appreciate you giving us time. Good luck this week, and let's do it again next week, same time.
Sounds good. Go Bills.
You got it. Michael F. Florio, NFL Network, stopping by the sports bar to give us some fantasy football advice as we head into those week three waiver wire claims.
I love this here, and I think he's right, too. Like 0-2 in fantasy, it's not like 0-2 in the NFL where the world is ending. You have enough time. But you should kind of pay attention to your waiver wire on Tuesday night. And specifically defenses, like if you can go get the Raiders, if they're still sitting out there, I can't imagine, like, maybe 50% of the leagues might still have the Raiders available. Probably a lot of leagues, teams are dumping the Tampa defense. Yeah, that looks like a favorable matchup here, too. The tight end question you brought up was very interesting. That, boy, if you invest in the tight end position, boy, you just got to have to ride that
right
out.
Now, if you said, oh, Sam LaPorta is my guy, I'm going to go with him in the second round. Oh, my God.
Sam LaPorta had no catches, no targets in the first half last week. What are they doing there?
So, I mean, I'm sympathetic if you believed in LaPorta based on what he did last season as a rookie. Less so if you're invested in Kyle Pitts and you're like, oh, this is the year. Like, something about Kyle Pitts just ain't working in Atlanta. And last night was another example of it where it's just like, nope, he's not the dude. They're just not feeding him as a featured receiver in that passing game. I had so much to unpack from last night's game. And another thing I'm thinking to myself here is, shame on you, Vic Fangio. I mean, I know you want to play prevent. I know you want to play soft. You don't want to give up you just gave up so much space. It was so easy for Kirk Cousins down that final drive to get that touchdown.
It's not taking into account that's a quarterback danger that's coming off an Achilles. Like, make him move. Send an extra guy. Make him make a quick decision in the hot read. Honestly, like, if you're facing a quarterback coming out, anybody faces Aaron Rodgers, same sort of deal. So, I mean, there are a lot of people and coaches you can blame, and we'll talk about this in happy hour, but ultimately it's going to be the head coach that's going to pay here.
Always. All right, happy hour is on the way next. We have time for your calls. Love for you to join us, 866-4326, as we look ahead to the start of week three coming up here on Thursday night with the Jets and the Patriots. Of course, the Bills playing again on Monday night as they host the Jaguars with an early kickoff at 7:30 coming up here on Monday. Action you'll be able to hear on The Fan. Rochester, join us for happy hour next on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.